English service of the Voice of America. I'm Douglas Impuga in Washington. Today is Sunday, March 5th, and here are some of the stories we're covering. French President Emmanuel Macron concludes a four-nation African tour with a pledge of $36 million as part of an EU aid package to conflict-hit Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo.
The Macron visit in DRC was not welcomed by locals of the country, and it's not only about where I am, but it's in all the country.
Thousands of protesters in the Tunisian capital, Tunis, in what appears to be the biggest protest yet against President Kais Saied. And a South African group is bringing films to African youth in impoverished areas with poor services through solar-powered portable cinemas.
After viewing the movie, you realize, the way I might have been doing things might have been a little bit offish or might have been wrong. And then it changes your perspective drastically to say, I can actually be a better person in my community.
Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. French President Emmanuel Macron on Saturday pledged $36 million dollars as part of an EU aid package to conflict-hit Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo, the French news agency AFP reports. On the final stop in Kinshasa of his four-nation African tour, Macron said any party seeking to derail peace efforts should face sanctions. AFP reports that the EU on Saturday announced that it was setting up a humanitarian air bridge to deliver aid to the conflict-hit eastern regions. The air bridge will link with Goma, the capital of DR Congo's eastern North Kivu province, where fighting with the M23 rebels has displaced more than 600,000 people. But perceptions of French support for neighboring Rwanda have stoked anti-French sentiments in the eastern regions of DRC. Earlier, I talked to reporter Alkatante Jafar about Macron's visit.
The Macron's visit in DRC was not welcomed by locals of the country. And it's not only about where I am, but it's in all the country. Yesterday and the day before yesterday, here in Goma, where I am in the eastern Congo, there was protest against this visit. And people demonstrated at the consulate of France called Institut Français. And they banned the flag of the Republic of France. During the visit, there was also a protest in Kinshasa and in Bukavu. And all people were saying the same thing. We can't welcome the president of a country who supports Rwanda when Rwanda is supporting M23, a rebellion who is killing people in DRC.
Did President Macron address those concerns or those issues?
I'm not sure directly because those protests didn't reach Macron. But we know that as demonstration was at the embassy and the consulate, he got the information that people demonstrated. And many media, international and locals, covered it. And I saw the story at France 24, which is the biggest TV in France. So the president of France know about the demonstration. But during the talks with the DRC president, they didn't talk about this demonstration.
President Macron, in his remarks, promised to give a lot of help to and aid to DRC. Did that assuage the people's concerns?
We will wait for the react of people because, as he said, it's about $34 million for Congolese people. Maybe this will change the people's thinking, but at the moment, let's say that everybody in DRC, especially in Eastern DRC, are not happy with the France Republic and their president.
As President Macron was visiting Kinshasa, there was fighting elsewhere in the country, in Eastern Congo, right?
It's about the situation in Eastern Congo. You know, the tension between Congo and Rwanda. Yesterday, there was fire exchange between FRDC element and Rwanda Defense Forces element at a border post. It's after the RDF guys shot dead an element of FRDC, and then FRDC replied. And this is not the first time. Let's say since last year, it can be the fifth time there is this tension at the border. And in the end of yesterday, it was very big because there was around 20 minutes of fire exchange between those two armies. And this made many people afraid because, you know, DRC here in Goma now, which depends by Rwanda, as the main roads of feeding people in Goma are closed, which are Ruchuru Road and Masisi Road. So now we import everything from Rwanda, and this tension may be a bad thing for people of Goma.
Reporter Alkatante Jafam, he spoke with me from Goma. Tunisia's powerful UGTT labor union rallied in the capital Saturday in what appeared to be the biggest protest yet against President Kais Saied. Reuters news agency says the protest follows the president's recent crackdown on opponents. Many thousands of protesters filled Habib Bagouba Avenue, the main street in central Tunis, according to Reuters. They were marching after weeks of arrests targeting prominent opponents of Saied, who has staged his first major crackdown since he seized wide-ranging powers in 2021, shutting down parliament and moving to rule by decree. The agency quotes the president's opponents, saying it's increasingly clear that he has dismantled the democracy won in 2011 revolution that triggered the Arab Spring and will end the freedoms it brought. Saied says his actions are legal and necessary to save Tunisia from chaos. Last week, authorities barred foreign labor union leaders from entering Tunisia to take part in solidarity with the UGTT, and Saied said he would not accept foreigners joining protests.
Direct from Washington, the voice of America, VOA.
Former President George W. Bush recently urged Washington lawmakers to authorize the president's emergency plan for AIDS relief, an initiative he launched 2 decades ago against one of the deadliest diseases at the time. Bush was joined by former president of Tanzania, Jakaya Kikwete, and others at the U.S. Institute of Peace. VOA senior correspondent Mariama Diallo has this report.
Former President George W. Bush recently urged Washington lawmakers to reauthorize the president's emergency plan for AIDS relief, an initiative he launched 2 decades ago against one of the deadliest diseases at the time. Bush was joined by former president of Tanzania, Jakaya Kikwete, and others at the U.S. Institute of Peace. VOA senior correspondent Mariama Diallo has this report.
Tonight, I propose the emergency plan for AIDS relief.
It was 20 years ago when former President George W. Bush made a plea before Congress at his State of the Union address.
I asked the Congress to commit $15 billion over the next 5 years, including nearly $10 billion in new money, to turn the tide against AIDS in the most afflicted nations of Africa and the Caribbean.
Fast forward to today. Bush, who came to Washington to mark his plan's 20-year anniversary, says the program to provide life-saving treatment to millions of people living with HIV and AIDS was a success. The president's emergency plan for AIDS relief, or PEPFAR, is due for reauthorization this year.
This program needs to be funded. And for the skeptics, all I ask is look at the results. And if the results don't impress you, then nothing will impress you.
The success of PEPFAR boils down to the numbers, says David Kramer, executive director of the Bush Institute.
Over 25 million lives have been saved as a result of President Bush's PEPFAR initiative. And it was a vision that he had to step in and help people who were in real need of help. He felt the United States was in a position to do so.
Since the legislation was signed into law in May 2003, PEPFAR has benefited from bipartisan support in Congress, even though its abstinence programs, a requirement later removed, had drawn criticism. Former President Donald Trump proposed to reduce PEPFAR's funds during his term, but was unsuccessful. Winnie Byanyima, executive director of the Joint United Nations Program on HIV/AIDS, or UNAIDS, recognizes PEPFAR's impact.
When he announced PEPFAR 20 years ago, our people were dying. Our countries were devastated. There was fear, there was pain, there was suffering. So we come here to honor President Bush, the American government, the American taxpayers, for $100 billion that has been put in this program.
She also says it was partnerships that formed between PEPFAR, the Global Fund, UNAIDS, civil societies, and governments that helped to turn the tide.
Thank you for your compassion.
Former President of Tanzania, Jakaya Kikwete, who joined Bush at the event, recalls getting tested publicly to encourage others who were afraid to do the same.
So the best thing is for my wife and I to lead by example. And we should not do it under the tent where nobody sees it. Of course, my veins were easy, but my wife had some problem. The pre-call several times before they could get the... I was very sorry for her. But we said that's the price of leadership.
With a target of ending AIDS by 2030, stopping new infections is a must, especially given 2021 data, says Byanyima.
Sadly, we had 1.5 million new infections worldwide, most of these in sub-Saharan Africa. We had 650,000 people who died in 2021 of AIDS-related illnesses.
Not one of those new infections and deaths had to happen, she said. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Washington.
The director of a hospital in a disputed city in the Somaliland region says at least 145 people have been killed in more than 2 months of fighting between anti-government fighters and Somaliland security forces after local elders declared their intention to reunite with Somalia. The director of the public hospital in Lasanod told the Associated Press that more than 1,080 other people have been wounded and over 100,000 families have fled the city of Lasanod since late December. He accused Somaliland forces of striking the hospital with mortar attacks, which the government has denied. The International Monetary Fund has approved a $114 million loan to help South Sudan address food insecurity and payment issues. South Sudan's finance and planning minister says the country has enhanced its foreign exchange reserves position so that the Bank of South Sudan can intervene when there are gaps in the foreign exchange market. Deng Gai Deng has the details for VOA from Bo.
The IMF said in a statement released yesterday that its executive board approved $114.8 million in emergency financing support to South Sudan to help the government address urgent balance of payment needs arising from heightened food insecurity. IMF says 4 straight years of intense flooding and fallout from Russia's war in Ukraine on the heels of the COVID-19 pandemic have exacerbated an already dire humanitarian situation in South Sudan. South Sudan Finance and Planning Minister Dier Tong Ngor told reporters in Juba Thursday that the emergency financing from the IMF would enhance the foreign reserves position for the country's central bank should it need to intervene in the market.
With this new financing, South Sudan has enhanced its foreign exchange reserves position, and the Bank of South Sudan can now intervene in the market to meet any gaps in the foreign exchange market. To counteract these new realities, South Sudanese authorities have worked to maintain macro financial stability in these highly challenging circumstances. Key macroeconomic policies have been geared towards avoiding monetary financing, safeguarding priority expenditure, easing pressure on international reserves, and preserving financial stability.
Moore says the loan will also help South Sudan meet other obligations.
This disbursement is equivalent to 35% of South Sudan's quota in the IMF, and it will help meet the urgent balance of payment needs while supporting food security, and the part that is going for the budget support will meet urgent health and education financing.
The IMF statement said continued implementation of the 2018 peace deal is a top priority for South Sudan's economy and social development, and encouraged government officials to continue working with the IMF. Abraham Aliet, a senior economic advisor to the government's economic cluster, says securing loans to solve the country's economic problems is a short-term fix.
What I am seeing in that, it is an emergency action to address the current inflation and the scarcity of dollar in the market, the pricing hiring up. So it can be a remedy for a short term, but it is not going to solve this problem in the long term. So yes, it is a short term solution with the consequences, of course, but we need to look for a very long term solution if we want to address the issue of crisis now we're facing.
Maliet says South Sudan should diversify its economy rather than relying on crude oil production for revenue.
We're only depending on oil, and then we take oil for collateral, and then we take loans, and we so it's not going to be sustainable, you know, but it is a remedy. If somebody got, you know, they say, Panadol do not take away, they do not cure the disease, but it's just stabilize you for the time being, but in the next few hours, the real disease will still come back.
Maliet says to solve the economic problems once and for all, South Sudan should bring experts on board and invest in their knowledge, as well as introduce business diplomacy with its neighboring countries. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng in Bor.
Signed an agreement earlier this year that would swap the West African country's debt to Portugal for environmental and renewable energy investments. The deal, known as a debt for nature swap, is being touted as a way for the country to reduce the impact of climate change. Edson Mendes, the director of a renewable energy training center in Cape Verde, spoke with Rick Shiro about the nation's unrealized potential for renewed energy sources such as solar and wind.
We have a pipeline of projects, namely in solar technology. Now, Cape Verde has around 38.3 megawatt new projects in photovoltaic. And we have other projects regarding the wind technology. Okay, with this project, it's possible to achieve the target for the 2025. We just have two years.
What is the objective for 2025?
It's to achieve 30% of penetration of renewable energy.
Is that a rare achievement? If you are able to meet that goal,
I think no many countries. Okay.
I mean, no African country has that rate.
No. In the continent, yes, we are the first one. Okay.
And what are the main challenges when it comes to developing renewable energy resources on Cape Verde?
The main challenge is we are a 10 island and 9 inhabitants, so we have 9 small systems.
It's the disconnectedness of the grid itself that's the challenge.
Yes, it's 9 different grids, okay? If it is possible to connect even some islands, okay, will be more advantage. Okay, we should to invest in the renewable energy, but this investment should be financial feasible.
When you talk about financial feasibility then, and can you tell me about the recent agreement between Portugal and Cape Verde, wherein Cape Verde's debt to the state of Portugal, not the private debt, but the state debt, can be reinvested into renewable energy?
Yes, the agreement that Cape Verde signed with Portugal is because the debt, if I'm not wrong, the debt is that Cape Verde have with Portugal is around 600 million of euros. So the idea is to use this this money for the financement of the Environment and Climate Fund. Cape Verde already have the Climate Fund. The idea is to use this money to for the financement of some projects. Okay. Of course, the main objective is to finance the project in the our energy transition program that is focused on the renewable energy and electrical mobility.
That was Edson Mendes, the director of Renewable Energy Training Center in Cape Verde. You're speaking to Ricky Shyrock from Prayer. VOA.
Stay engaged with VOA Africa. You can call us 24/7 on WhatsApp and leave a message, comments, or greetings. Dial the international code +1, then 202-258-3076. The number again is the international code +1, then 202-258-3076.
A South African group is bringing films to African youth in impoverished areas with poor services through solar-powered portable cinemas. The group Sunshine Cinema is in 4 countries but aims to inspire more youth on the continent through African films. Zahir Kasim reports from Pankop, South Africa.
Like most villages in South Africa, Pankop has little access to power or the internet. Watching a film is a rare treat from aid group Sunshine Cinema, which brings a solar-powered movie projector and speaker to poor, remote areas. The group also provides jobs to operators like Larata Otlawa, who says the African films they select are not about entertaining, but inspiring.
After viewing a movie, you realize, the way I might have been doing things might have been a little bit offish or might have been wrong. And then it changes your perspective drastically to say, I can actually be a better person in my community. I can actually go out there and be the change in my community.
South Africa's government says nearly 2/3 of youth under 24 are jobless, raising the temptation of crime, especially among young men. A boys' mentorship program hosted today's film, Riding with Sugar, a South African film that tackles the issue of xenophobia. 21-year-old Ofense Mekwa says the film was inspiring.
Events like this are important because they help us to know which part of the future we want to be a part of. A future whereby we can eliminate all racism, all xenophobic attacks on foreigners, and we just want to be a better version of humanity.
Sunshine Cinema, which runs on donations, started a decade ago in South Africa, but has since spread to neighboring Zimbabwe, Zambia, and Malawi. They're ready to expand further across Africa, says co-founder Sadal Willow-Smith.
We would love to expand into other African countries. We believe that we have a model that can really work because we are addressing youth unemployment at the same time as working in distribution. The young people that go through our program receive rigorous training and impact facilitation. So they're coming out of this program with a lot of soft skills as well as a lot of skills that can be transferred into the workplace.
Sunshine Cinema says their goal is to spark conversations about issues that affect Africans. They also offer an online course for anyone in a developing country with scholarships for those who cannot afford it on how to use media for impact. For remote communities like Pankop, the impact of the solar-powered cinema is to bring hope for a better world. Zahir Kasim for VOA News, Pankop, South Africa.
Voice of America, and you're listening to Nightline Africa. And coming up in the second half of the program, sports. A commentary by Dr. James Joner, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs, and music from our African collection. In Africa Sports, let's go to Abuja and join Samson O'Malley. Hey, Samson.
Hi, Douglas, and good evening, sports fans. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. Four African teams have booked their place in the semi-finals of the 2023 CAF Under 20 Africa Cup of Nations, which has been hosted by Egypt. The semi-final berth also secures passage to the FIFA Under 20 World Cup to be hosted in Indonesia by the four teams. Senegal, Nigeria, The Gambia, and Tunisia all sealed their places in the last four phase thanks to some impressive performances in the quarterfinal matches played this past week. The two semi-final matches will be played on Monday, the 6th of March. Senegal will take on Tunisia in the first match at the Suez Canal Authority Stadium in Ismailia, while the other semi-final game will see the Gambia facing Nigeria at the Cairo International Stadium. Record champions Al Ahly clinched their first victory in Group A of the CAF Champions League after seeing off Cameroon's Cotton Sports 3-0 in Cairo on Saturday. The victory took Al Ahly to 4 points, 2 shy of second place Al Hilal and 4 behind group leaders Mamelodi Sundowns of South Africa. Cotton Sports, on the other hand, suffered their third successive defeat and remains bottom of the table with no points. In basketball news, the CEO of NBA Africa, Victor Williams, says the goal of the NBA Africa is to get basketball to become part of school curriculum on the continent. Williams, while revealing some of the upcoming plans of the NBA Africa, said the goal will include, among other things, expanding the junior NBA programs on the continent, building new courts, and making basketball more accessible.
Even if you don't get there, just what it takes you to make progress in that goal will put you substantially ahead of where you need to be. So for us to get to that goal, I think a number of things are necessary that we're working on. We get there by creating more opportunities for kids to play the game. It involves expanding our junior NBA programs. It involves getting basketball into school curriculums. It involves building courts so that kids have the opportunity to play. And then working with partners to provide balls and other equipment that they can play with. I think it also involves making basketball much more common and easy to access around the continent so that kids can become fans of the game.
And finally, in athletics, Rosemary Wanjiru of Kenya won the Tokyo Marathon, a World Athletics Platinum Label Road Race, on Sunday. Kenyan's Wanjiru ran 2 hours, 16 minutes, 28 seconds, a victory that took her to number 6 on the Women's World Marathon all-time list. Sunday's victory by Wanjiru became the 7th fastest women's marathon performance in history, winning by 28 seconds ahead of Ethiopia's Sihe Gemachu, who also dipped under 2 hours, 17 minutes, herself becoming just the 8th woman to achieve the feat. And that's all for this week's edition of Nightline Africa Sports. Back to you, Douglas.
Thanks, Samson. Now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospects in times of conflict and in times of peace. Here is one man's point of view with Dr. James Joner, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Hello, Dr. Joner.
Good evening, Africa. At the conclusion of the recent summit of the African Union in Addis Ababa, it was reported that the summit had agreed to revisit its peace mission in Libya. It was also disclosed that President Sassou Nguesso of Congo Republic, Brazzaville, had been in touch with parties in Libya preparing for the intervention of the African Union. This is a welcome news, and it is understandable that after its successful peace mission in the Tigray-Ethiopian dispute, the African Union feels confident that African questions could be solved by Africans themselves. But while this is a good move, it is useful to recall what happened when the African Union in 2011 intervened in Libya. As the problems intensified between President Gaddafi and his opponents, particularly in eastern Libya, the African Union produced a useful roadmap aimed at reconciliation between Colonel Gaddafi and his opponents. But those whose main interest in Libya was regime change, this was not enough. They decided to sideline the African Union on the ground that the organization was too much indebted to Colonel Gaddafi, who they believed was the major financier of the organization. The first move was to ask the Gulf Cooperation Council to adopt a resolution calling for a no-fly zone in Libya. The resolution adopted by the Gulf Cooperation Council was taken to the League of Arab States for its endorsement. There were skepticism among the members of the League, but in the end, they decided to support it with one proviso. They included the provision that there should be no boots on the ground. When the Arab League resolution reached the Security Council, there were also many, many concerns that a no-flying zone might be used for other purposes. But because no one wants to prevent any disaster in Libya, the resolution was adopted by a very narrow majority, and many prominent members of the council abstained. But the three African states endorsed the resolution. It should be necessary to point out that in reaching that decision, the draft resolution contained an ambiguous clause, not the type of constructive ambiguity that can promote peace, but the new term strategic ambiguity, which is something else. After the resolution was adopted, NATO assumed the initiative to implement the no-fly zone. The die was cast. The fighting raged. Planes were in the air. Bombs were being dropped. Those opposing Gaddafi gained momentum. In the end, he was cornered and brutally murdered. But democracy and peace did not bloom in Libya. Instead, chaos and mayhem descended on that country. Those whose interests were mainly to secure the fuel or oil resources of Libya began to compete among themselves as who should be in charge of the oil resources of Libya. And this has complicated any effort to find peace in Libya. The United Nations and others have been trying their best, but no agreement has yet been reached as to who should represent Libya internationally. The United Nations had approved of government in Libya, but the parliament in Tobruk that is opposed to this UN endorsement is claiming to be the actual ruler of Libya. But in the absence of finding agreement for the holding election, the problems continued. So this is why the African Union wanted to try again, this time hoping there will be no obstacle on its way. Africans should welcome this approach of the African Union, but should they have a clear eye that there will be indeed obstacles? In fact, detractors of the African Union in this mission would want you to believe that the African Union is acting as fools rushing where angels fear to tread. Hopefully, the African Union will prove these detractors woefully wrong. I thank you.
That was one man's point of view, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. It's Sunday on Let's Learn Africa, and this is the time we get relaxed and reflect with music from the continent.
Anytime you dress, baby, beautiful. How have you been there, my love, home? My baby loves me. With all the rumors about me, my baby loves me. Ya kinka banka, ya dosi moka bayi. Ich bin so gern bei dir, pack ich dich ein oder bleib ich hier?
Baby, I request for you. dagova kamsha azihana inorova ma hadicha dagosa sana ingangova yado famba ma ignorance you zio yerdo
zio yerdo
zio yerdo isere mi buzo mama
zio yerdo
mi buzo ya chaina da minuro
zio yerdo
minuro zaja minuro jaiso mama unogona kudzidzisa vana vangu nurimirwa mai hausumbo venga mai vangu kana hama dzangu mai here hausombo venga mai vangu kana hama dzangu anunzi hemi haladeo oh 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 oh
people looking for love and finding the one, and suddenly Misha, suddenly Misha, Holly and Aisha. Imagine living your life and never finding the one outside your tiny Aisha. But we both know it's better this way. Manifesting, single and searching, like a virgin.
Fear to fall in love, but I go fight till the day I go call you mine. Ah, all day, menkume menkume baby, in sweetie, in jolly, menkume menkume lady. Ah, oh my baby, you're a queen. Compliment me as a king. Kaje buwe nsumo moko don baby. Bra befin my mom. Bra befin my no. Bra befin my no.
Thank you. tell nothing now when he went to shallow. And this is all the shing and the secular. For other cabaret, Margarita Sakamana live a minute and she didn't be there. Yanni Nash, Yagile, Yavatashi, Kalipakale, Yanjime, Nenepesh, and Matam, Machim Kaguyash, Masagi.
Sunday Music Spot on Nightline Africa from the English service of the Voice of America. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us tonight. Hope you enjoyed the program. And as you know by now, we're on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Join us again on Saturday. Have a very good evening.